Okay, so many of you know that I spent 4 incredibly inspiring, impactful days in Eretz Yisrael last week. It's a little bit hard to describe what we witnessed and what we observed, only because words are limited in their ability to convey the depth of the pain and the sadness, I guess the intensity of the feelings and the emotions that are seared in the hearts and minds of all the people who were there, and everything that we observed. Just getting on the plane, somebody right before I went to the airport came to give me shliach mitzvah money. And I said, I don't really think I need shliach mitzvah money. I am a shliach mitzvah. Only to go on the plane and realize that every person on the plane was a shliach mitzvah. There was not a single seat on the plane that was empty, but everybody was there coming to volunteer from so many different kinds of communities. There was a group from Lakewood that was on our plane together with us, 35 people. We were a small group. There were groups from everywhere, secular and observant. One thing that I noticed that I think many others noticed as well is as we were flying, came time to daven shachris, and there were many unaffiliated men who came over and asked the Orthodox men on the flight if they can borrow their tefillin. One of them was the head of the Federation in California, another one from Florida, and it was just amazing. We were not acting like Chabad, we were not soliciting, we were not asking them. They were interested. There's a feeling in the air, and it was something that was so powerful and so palpable. But unfortunately, last week we saw the horrors, we saw the absolute bowels of Emek HaBacha, as we say in our davening. We saw the atrocities, we saw the barbarism, the mass destruction, the massacre, the pogrom, the ravaging of people's homes and all their property, and all the remains of the wreckage that these bloodthirsty subhuman beings brought onto the Jewish community, which has then thrown all of us into a complete state of chaos and so much destruction. At the same time that we saw all of that, we were also given a window into a completely different experience, the opposite experience of the courageous, resolute, indomitable spirit of the Jewish people across the land of Eretz Yisrael. And I still feel a few days later like I'm in a dark cloud and an overcast, especially that yesterday I went to participate in the UN with the ambassador. That was something that just put me right back to where I was last week. And as you try to process and understand everything that you see and all that you experience, I guess preparing for this talk this morning has helped me try to organize my own thoughts, so I'm grateful to you for coming and for making me do that. First of all, I think the first and most important thing that I will share is that as proactive and as pro-Israel, as involved as our community is, as much as we follow the news and as much as we have relatives in Israel and as much as we are visiting and we're volunteering, I really believe after being there this week that we have no idea and no understanding of the extent and the profundity, the intensity of everything that happened in this massacre on October 7th. Everything that I had read in the news, all the pictures that I had seen, all the interviews that I had watched, does not remotely come close to measure up to the reality of what's actually happening on the ground and everything that we saw. Just to give you a small sense, and again, this is one example of a million different kinds of examples that we can give. I'm sure all of us at this point have heard of the community of Nir Oz. We probably never heard of it until 6 weeks ago. But it's a very small community, only 400 people, a lovely community. And at the entrance to that community, they have a communal mailbox. They don't have a private mailbox for each individual family at their home. They have one communal mailbox. Each family has their own box there. This is a picture. I would love for anyone who wants to see it afterward, you're welcome to look at it. This is a picture of that communal mailbox, and it gives you a little bit of a sense of what exactly was happening. So there are probably about 80 families, which compute to 400 people or so. This is the 80 mailboxes. Now you'll notice here, it's hard to see from far, but you can look at it afterward. You'll notice here, almost every mailbox has a sticker on it. Some of them are red, some of them are black. The black one says Chatuf, The red one says Nirtzach or Nirtzacha. Some of these mailboxes have five or six of one of those, because there are families that not one person was murdered, but five or six. There are families that didn't just suffer the murder of one member of their family, but also one of them or two of them have been taken hostage. These two over here, you'll notice there's a blue sticker here and a blue sticker there next to a black one. That's because two elderly couples were taken hostage, Chatuf and Chatuf, and then it says Mushukhreret, the blue ones, because those are the two women that were let go whose husbands are still there. This just gives you a small glimpse and a small sense of what it is that we saw, but it makes you understand that each one of these communities is a community, is a family. Somebody asked me, how did I go to the UN yesterday and how could I have managed that experience? To be honest, for me at least, I can't talk for anybody else, but for me at least, being in Eretz Yisrael last week, seeing what we saw, and more importantly, listening to the firsthand accounts, to the stories of the people from these communities, sitting with them in their hotels and listening to each one of them and what they saw and what they lived through, to me was much, much more powerful than anything that anyone's going to show me. It's the same sentiment that we have when we listen to people who survived the Holocaust. But that's what this is. That's what these people saw. You go, just again, just to give a picture, just a little bit. I'm not saying that I recommend that anyone go to the places where I went last week. I'm not sure it's a great idea. But you go to these communities, and of course every house has a mamad, has a safe room. Every mamad, every safe room has to be safe. So of course you have a door, and it's protected. And then you also have a window, because it's not so safe to live in a room that doesn't have a window. Now, while all this was unfolding, nobody wanted to open their windows because they were afraid that that was going to be their end. So every family locked themselves in the safe room. And you walk into these homes and you see how the entire house is bombed out. Every single house is bombed out. There's nothing there. A thriving, beautiful community. Every single one of them is bombed out. And these families were hiding in the safe rooms, hoping that that was going to save them. And we noticed that every single home had, right outside the window of the safe room, there was a chair right outside the window. So, naively, I asked the person who was taking us around, the mifakade of the IDF who took us around there, I asked him, why is there a chair by every window? What's that for? He said, oh, you want to know why there's a chair there? I'll tell you. Because every family went to hide in the safe room. And at some point, the terrorists realized there was no way to get in. They weren't going to be able to penetrate. Every safe room has so many bullet holes. They tried. They tried getting in. They were unable to. So at some point, they realized we have to come up with a plan B. So what's the plan B? They went outside to everyone's cars, removed the tires from their cars, brought the tires into the house, lit the tires on fire so that the whole house was filled with smoke. And on the bottom of the door of the safe room, it's not completely sealed. So the smoke started entering into the safe room, and families were suffocating. At that point, they opened the windows to get some air. And at every single window, there was a terrorist waiting on a chair for them to open the window and grab them out the second that they opened that window. This is what we saw every single house we went to. Every single one. And I really feel, as much as we're following and as much as we're listening and as much as we're watching and seeing interviews, I really feel this is not coming through. The intensity of what happened and the barbarism and the absolute destruction. You know, in last week's parsha, we read Parshas Toldos. We're told that at some point, Avraham Avinu and his servants had dug wells for the well-being of the community, for the well-being of the people. And we're told, Kala be'eros asher chafru avdei aviv bimei Avraham aviv. All of those wells that were dug out in the community to try to help, to try to bring the community and make it more manageable, to make it more livable. Sasmum haplishtim. The plishtim, the enemies, came along and just closed them up. Vayimalum afar. And they filled them up with dust. So it's one thing to go and steal something from another person to have your own personal benefit, to have your own gain. Somebody dug a well and it's theirs, and now I go out to war and I steal it from them. But that's not what happened. The Torah says that Avraham Avinu dug these wells to try to benefit the community. His enemies came and didn't steal the wells. All they did was fill up the wells with dust, with dirt, so that nobody could use it. They wouldn't gain, and nobody else would gain. And I felt as I read that in this past week's parsha, there's no more accurate description of our current enemy that we face, who took everything good, everything positive, everything successful, all that was thriving, and just wrecked it and destroyed it without any purpose, without any goal, simply for the sake of destruction, limiting everything to nothing, taking thriving communities and making them into absolute carnage. This has nothing to do with the two-state solution. This has nothing to do with crowded refugee camps. It is not a turf war over the land of Israel. This has everything to do with death and destruction, as the Torah describes in this week's parsha, Sasmum avdei plishtim vayimalum afar. They took all that is good just simply for the sake of destruction. Not because they wanted it, not because they plan to occupy, but simply because they hate us and they want to destroy everything that we represent. And we need to call it for what it is. And when you think about the way they live their lives, instead of investing the billions of dollars that they get from all over the world, people who want to help their community, all their energy and all their resources are given just to further this cause of destruction. Not to benefit their own lives, not to make them have better living conditions, but simply to destroy everything that's good in the world. So how do we respond? How did the Jewish people respond? Well, the Torah tells us in the very same story in last week's Parsha, what was Yitzchak Avinu's response when the enemies came and destroyed everything that his father had built? His father's whole life mission, everything that his father put together to benefit the community, was now in shambles, was now destroyed. What was Yitzchak Avinu's response? Says the Torah, Vayashav Yitzchak. Yitzchak comes back to the very same location. Vayachbar es be'eros hamayim asher chafru bimei Avram Aviv. You have two options when you look at destruction. You can sit and be depressed for the rest of your life. You can sit and cry about it. You can complain and point fingers. Or you can say, I have the resolve to go and rebuild. I don't destroy, I build. That's what I do. That's what we do. And that's what we saw. And we're told, Vayikra lahem shemos kishemos asher kar lahem aviv. I'm sure you've heard of Kibbutz Be'eri at this point. Do you know that Kibbutz Be'eri, before this happened, had the biggest printing press in the state of Israel? Do you know that that is up and running already? It's a military zone. It's a war zone. Every 2 to 3 minutes you hear either a rocket flying over your head, you have to run for shelter, or you hear artillery shells that are shooting thunderous sounds. It's terrifying to be there. I don't know about anyone else who was with me. I was terrified to be there. Sorry, I went anyway. But I was really, really afraid to be there. And yet, the members of that community have a printing press that is up and running because we build. We are the children of Yitzchak Avinu, and we look at destruction in the face and we respond by building. One of the inspiring moments that I had last week was when we had the opportunity to speak with Rabbi Josh Fass, who is a really close friend. He's the founder of Nefesh B'Nefesh. His story is very inspiring because he was an average person living here in the United States who decided that he had to do something to help the Jewish people make Aliyah. And he has transformed the state of Israel and the process of Aliyah. He has already brought single-handedly 80,000 people from across the world to live in Israel over the last 19 years. This is the greatest success story and the most inspiring story because he had no connections. All he had was a dream. And he followed his dream and he accomplished and he continues to accomplish. And he's amazing. One of the things he shared with me was that in the past 4 weeks alone, he has hosted in his building over 40 weddings of young chayalim. And I said, why are you hosting these weddings? He said, well, these chayalim are on the front lines. They have 2 days off. And in the 2 days off, they make a decision that they want to get married. They want to get married. There have been 40 of those weddings that have already taken place of people who are risking their lives, who are going right back into Gaza 2 days later, but who all they want is to build. And it's symbolic to show this is how we react. This is how we respond. We build families. We get married. We make commitments. Doesn't matter that we're going back out to war in the next day or two. And I went one evening, and I was so moved. I was moved because that response is so much of what we are. That's what we believe in. And when you see our chayalim who are so positive, who are looking death in the eye every single day but are so positive, and in the face of so much devastation, are making a choice to respond like Yitzchak Avinu, who also looks destruction in the eye but is determined to build and to have a productive future. That's what we are. Last week, we celebrated Rosh Chodesh, and I have to speak on a number of the army bases that we went to. Not that I knew what to say. I really struggled last week because I had so much going on in my own head and I really didn't have much to share. But one of the points that I mentioned is that it's interesting that Klal Yisrael is Monim Lelevana. We follow a lunar calendar and not a solar calendar. And many have asked why. The solar calendar should be the most obvious choice. Rav Asher Weiss once told me, it's a line that I have written on my desk, because he told it to me my first day that I took the job here. And he said, Lo chashuv kama ata gadol, ela kama ata gadel. Nobody in the world cares how big you are, how famous and important you think you are. All that matters in life is how much you're willing to grow. How much you're willing to challenge yourself. That's what matters, and that's what makes you successful. And that's why we are Monim Lelevana. The sun is a constant, the sun is always strong, doesn't get bigger, doesn't get smaller, it is what it is. And the moon is the symbolism for all of us of what Jewish history really is all about. As we say in Kiddush Levana, Shehem Asidim Lizchadish Kemosa, just like the moon rejuvenates itself and grows and sometimes is deflated, sometimes gets smaller, that's what all of Jewish history is all about. That we have the opportunity to look at that experience of being deflated, of being defeated, and to then turn around and say, we pledge ourselves and we have a commitment, Shehem Asidim Lizchadish Kemosa, that we assume that we are going to be able to have the strength and the fortitude to build and to grow just like the Levana does as well. The Torah tells us in last week's parsha that there was a Rav Ba'aretz, there was a famine, and of course, when there's a famine, it's very difficult times and very uncomfortable and painful. People are losing lives, and at that moment, Yitzchak Avinu does what his father did. What does a person do when there's a famine? You go somewhere else. You can't survive. It's too painful. It's too difficult to be here. And at that moment, HaKadosh Baruch Hu comes to him, Vayera Elav Hashem Vayomer. HaKadosh Baruch Hu comes and engages Yitzchak in conversation, and he says, Al Tered Mitzrayma. Don't go to Mitzrayim. Shchon Ba'aretz Asher Amar Elecha. You're to stay here. Gur Ba'aretz Azos Ve'eye Imcha Ve'avarcheka. I want you to stay here, and I promise you, you're going to have blessing from staying here. What I take from that is that even when times are difficult and even when times are rough, the Ribbono Shel Olam turns to us and says, your home is Eretz Yisrael. Every Jew needs to feel comfortable in Eretz Yisrael. That's where we should be. Have you not seen the articles that are writing about all the Jews in America who are going to Israel to volunteer? It's unheard of. People who are running to go, rushing to go into a military zone where they may lose their lives. The answer is yes, because that is home for us. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Yitzchak Avinu, Shchon Ba'aretz Azos. It's difficult, and sometimes it's painful, and it's not so easy, and there may be a Rav Ba'aretz, and today there's no famine, but there's other problems that are going on, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu comes to all of us and says, you stay there, Va'avarcheka, because that's where Jewish destiny belongs, that's where it's supposed to be. Ve'eya imcha, and I will be with you, because that's where you're supposed to be as the people who are the children of Avram, Yitzchak, V'Yaakov. And I've used this opportunity of this terrible time to remind myself what it is that we're investing in. Why am I giving money? What are we fighting for? Why do I have so many members of my own family that are fighting in the IDF? Why? It's an opportunity to be reminded that we are fighting valiantly for our right to live as Jews in the land of Eretz Yisrael. This is not a small ambition. This is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu promised every one of the Avos and Imos. It's what Jews have fought and given their lives for so many generations. It's what Jews have dreamt about for the last few thousand years. Is it a coincidence to you that every single one of the great Jewish leaders in Chumash has their first conversation, their first interaction with HaKadosh Baruch Hu is about the land of Eretz Yisrael? Think about it. Avraham Avinu, the first time that the Torah records a conversation between himself and HaKadosh Baruch Hu was what? Lech lecha me'artzecha mimoladetecha el ha'aretz asher areka. There's lots of things that Kodesh Baruch Hu could have spoken to him about. Avraham Avinu was the first believer in God. He could have said a lot of different things to him. But the first choice to talk to Avraham Avinu and communicate with him is about his connection and his passion toward the land of Eretz Yisrael. Yitzchak Avinu, as we just mentioned, the first time the Torah has any recorded conversation between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Yitzchak Avinu is when there was a famine in the land and he wants to go down, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, no, Shchon Ba'aretz Hazoz, you belong here. Don't leave the land of Eretz Yisrael. Yaakov Avinu in our parsha, the first time he engages HaKadosh Baruch Hu, V'hinei Sulam Mutzav Arza V'rosha Magia HaShamayma, V'hinei Malachei Elokim Olam V'yardim Bo, the famous story of Yaakov Avinu and the ladder and the angels. And what does HaKadosh Baruch Hu say? Ha'aretz asher atah shochev aleha lecha etenena ulezarecha. This land of Eretz Yisrael, this sacred land where you find yourself, is going to be yours, and this is your birthright, and this is where you belong. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu promises him, I'm going to make sure that you come back here. You're going to have a long journey, a long odyssey. You're going to see all kinds of different parts of the community. They're not going to be favorable to you, but I promise you, you're going to come back here. Moshe Rabbeinu, the first time HaKadosh Baruch Hu engages him in conversation is by the Sneh. And what does he tell him? Re'o ra'isi es ani ami Yisrael, I've seen the terrible suffering of the Jewish people and I see what they're living through. But I want you to go tell them that there's going to come a time. Ve'er lehatzila miyad Mitzrayim ulehalosa la'aretz ahi el eretz zavas chalav dvash. I want the Jewish people to know, and again, the first time that there's a communication between Moshe Rabbeinu and HaKadosh Baruch Hu is once again focused on Eretz Yisrael. And finally, Yehoshua ben Nun, who is the protege, who is the one who comes after Moshe Rabbeinu, who leads the Jewish people, what does HaKadosh Baruch Hu say to him in the first parak of Sefer Yehoshua? Moshe Avdi Meis. Moshe Rabbeinu has died. You're now the leader. What is your job as the leader? V'ata, your job is kum avoras hayarden hazeh el ha'aretz asher anochi nosein lahem levnei Yisrael. Your job is to take the Jewish people into the land of Eretz Yisrael because that is where they belong. Do you think this is coincidental? That the first conversation, the first communication that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has with every one of the greatest Jewish leaders focuses around Eretz Yisrael. One of the greatest highlights for me this week was when we had the opportunity to meet Ezra Yachin. Anybody here knows who Ezra Yachin is? Ezra Yachin is a legend. The man is amazing. I think he's blind in one eye. I don't know. He's a 96-year-old man who is currently the oldest serving volunteer reservist in the IDF. This man is amazing. So Ezra Yachin came to meet us in Sderot. We were there with hundreds of chayalim. He comes out in his army fatigues and he wanted to share a few words with the group. So I thought he wanted to share a few words with the soldiers. I had said a few words. Rabbi Rimon met us there. He spoke a little bit. Rabbi Fendel, the Rosh Hashiva of Sderot, spoke to the Chayalim a little. And then this little man, Ezra Yachin, comes out and he says, I also want to speak. I said, great, go ahead. So he turns to the Chayalim and he says, I don't have to talk to you. You know what your job is. Then he turns to us. He says, you are the ones I need to talk to. I was actually excited before he started speaking. And then I was deflated when he was finished. And he turns to us and he says, he starts going through the history of his life. And he says that he was a member of Lehi. He fought for the independence of the Jewish state. He then went on to describe the detailed involvement that he had in every subsequent war that the Jewish people have fought in the state of Israel since 1948. He spoke about his many relatives and friends over the years who he had lost along the way and about his abounding love for Eretz Yisrael. And that explained why he's volunteering at 96 years old to still be a part of the Army Reserves. Not sure exactly what he's doing, but when we came there, he was mopping the floors. 96 years old, this man was mopping the floors so that the Chayalim wouldn't have a dirty kitchen that they're eating from. And then he turns to all of us and he says, So do you think I sacrificed all of this so that all of you should stay in Chutz La'aretz? Is that why I lost all my family members and all of my friends? Is that why I fought for Israel's independence and in every subsequent war? So that we should have 7 or 8 million Jews still living in the United States? Imagine if all of you would have come over the last 75 years. I didn't expect you to come the first year. But it's been a long time. What is your excuse? Why are you not here? Do you not think the Jewish people would be stronger if 8 million Jews in the United States had actually come to Eretz Yisrael in the last 75 years? It's where every Jew belongs. Before I got on the plane, I was very nervous. I'm not a nervous person in general. I can tell you I landed in Israel and I felt safe. I'm not sure why. It doesn't really make sense. Why do you feel safe when there are rockets and Tzeva Adom everywhere you go and shootings and stabbings every day we were there? But I felt much safer. Because Eretz Yisrael is our home. And it's where HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants all of us to be. In this week's Parsha, Parsha's Vayetze, Vayomer Hashem al Yaakov, HaKadosh Baruch Hu turns to Yaakov Avinu at some point after he's going through all of his travels and he says to him, Shuv el Eretz Abosecha ulemalatatecha ve'eya imach. Yaakov Avinu, it's time to go back to the place where you belong. I know you've had a journey, and I know you both built a family, and you married your wives, and you have all your children, but now it's time. Now it's time. Shuv el Eretz Abosecha ulemalatecha ve'eya imach, says Rashi. Shuv el Eretz Abosecha, I want you to go back to the land of your fathers, to Eretz Yisrael. Visham eya imach. And that is where I promise I'll be with you. Avo ba'odcha mechuber letamei, while you stay here in Chutz La'aretz, I can't be with you when you're in Chutz La'aretz. It's not the same. HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Yaakov Avinu, it's just not the same. The relationship cannot be the same when you're not living in Eretz Yisrael. And we feel it, and we know it to be the case. Which is why the Gemara says in the end of Maseches Moed Katan, that when Rav Huna, one of the great Amoraim, passed away, Rav Abba, his friend, gave a hesped on him. And he said, you should all know Rav Huna was such a great individual. Roi shetishra alav shechina. He should have had Ruach HaKodesh. The Shechina should have been with him all the time. However, the problem was he lived in Chutz La'aretz. The point being, we cannot have the relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu that we want while we live in Chutz La'aretz. It just doesn't exist. And this is what we're told in last week's parsha as well. V'nasati lecha ulezarecha es kol eretz kanan la'achuzas olam v'ayisi lahem le'elohim. That's a direct correlation to the promise. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I'm going to give you the land, and then the next words are, v'ayisi lahem le'elohim. I will be your God. Why does that have a connection? Because the answer is, so long as you live in Chutz La'aretz, you're not home. You're not with your father. You're not in the relationship in the deepest way that you can possibly be. And I use this time just to remind myself what it is that we're fighting for. We're fighting to have the opportunity once again to be free of all of our enemies and to have the chance to be in our home with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, our Father. As the Torah says in Sefer Devarim, when describing Eretz Yisrael, it's an Eretz Asher Enei Hashem Elokecha Ba Meireishis Hashana Ad Achris Shana. The eyes of HaKadosh Baruch Hu are on the land of Eretz Yisrael at all times. There's a certain hashkacha, there's an intensity of a relationship that exists there that just doesn't exist when you're not together. Think about any couple. Of course, when they live in the same house, they're much closer. When they separate, they might write letters or text or call each other, but there's a certain depth of that relationship that's missing. It's obvious. And that's what's missing. And that's what we fight for. That's what we want. Not for secular Zionism, not for any ideology. We fight for the opportunity to be with HaKadosh Baruch Hu once again. and to have the opportunity to be home, where we all belong and where we're supposed to feel most comfortable. HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Yaakov Avinu as he's going out into the odyssey of his life, into Galus, Hine anochi imachu shmarticha b'chal asher telech. HaKadosh Baruch Hu promises Yaakov Avinu in our parsha, I'm going to be with you. Ushmarticha, I'm going to look after you. Imagine Yaakov Avinu is leaving his house. He's a fugitive. He had an amazing life. Everything was great. Everything was perfect. And now he's going out into a very dangerous world. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells him, Ushmarticha b'chal asher telech. I'm going to look out for you. V'hashivosicha el ha'adama azos. And I'm going to bring you back to this land. Ki lo ezavcha. Because I will never leave you. Ad asher masisi es asher dibarti lach. And in truth and essence, it's not only HaKadosh Baruch Hu talking to Yaakov Avinu, that is HaKadosh Baruch Hu talking to every Jew from the time of Yaakov Avinu. And what was the Ribbono Shel Olam saying to us? What the Ribbono Shel Olam was saying, Rav Tzadok writes in one of his Svarim, Havtachas HaKadosh Baruch Hu Yaakov Avinu, this promise of HaKadosh Baruch Hu to Yaakov Avinu was not only for him. Lo haisa havtachas shah, ela havtacha la'omei ad. This was a promise for all eternity. You're going to go out into the world, there's going to be complications, you're going to be on a college campus, it's not going to go so easily. But I promise you, says HaKadosh Baruch Hu, V'hashivosicha ela adama azos. Remember the end goal. Don't ever forget why we fight for the people who we are. What are we fighting for? We're fighting because the end goal is V'hashivosicha el ha'adama hazos. And don't be afraid, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says. Because E'yeimach, I promise I'll be with you. We had a young 25-year-old man. His name was Nehorai. A gem of a person. He was our Malava Neshek. He was our armed security guard for the week. I sometimes think, these chayalim that you meet are so sweet and so genuine. I look at my nephews. I got together with them last week. They all came back from wherever they were fighting. And I say, I have no idea how you're a chayal. You wouldn't know how to kill a fly. I don't know. You're just the sweetest people. This guy, Nehorai, such a sweet guy. So he came along with us for the week. He was the armed security guard. That's what shvigars are for. Thank you. Thank you. She just wants me to be okay because we have a wedding next week in Mirtz Hashem. My sister-in-law is getting married. L'chaim, I'll be all right. Don't worry. I hope to be in the country. So this boy, he's really lovely. We all appreciated spending time with him. And the original plan was he was going to be with us from Sunday until Thursday evening when we were leaving. On Wednesday, he came over to me. He apologizes. He says, you know, I'm sorry. I'm not going to be able to join you tomorrow, as we had originally scheduled and made up. So I asked him, why are you leaving a day early? To which he said that he happens to be a member of an elite unit in the IDF, which is basically the equivalent of the Navy SEALs here in America. I don't know exactly what it's called there. And his unit was called up once again to go into Gaza, and he would be reporting back late Wednesday evening to go together with his unit, because Thursday they're supposed to go back in. He tells me that the soldiers in his unit are trained. They frequently jump out of helicopters to do special force missions. And he tells me that their mission over the next couple of days is they're going to be jumping out of their helicopters to go onto the roof of Shifa Hospital to try to occupy it. I was completely taken aback. I was standing next to him. I had no idea what to say. Here's a lovely young man who's married for a year or two, who's about to enter a booby-trapped hospital where people are getting killed every day. So I thought, I'll play it safe. I don't know what I'm supposed to say. I told him, I took out a piece of paper and I asked him for his name and I said, you know, I'll daven for you. Without one ounce of hesitation, literally, not one second of hesitation, he looks me in the eye and he says, you're going to daven for me? I have a havtacha. I have a promise. Ki Hashem Elokecha mishalech b'kerev machanecha. I'm fine. I feel bad for you Jews in America. You have no havtacha. God never promised that you're safe. God promised me he's going to be with me. I have nothing that I'm afraid of. So why don't you give me your name? And I'll be happy to daven for you." I was so overwhelmed listening to this guy. He's a regular kid. But he has his head on straight. He knows what's right and wrong. And we're all backwards. He knows what it is. He knows that HaKadosh Baruch Hu promised him. And of course, there are casualties of war. But he goes in with the mindset that HaKadosh Baruch Hu promised me I'm going to be okay. You think I'm afraid? That was the overall spirit of every chayal who we spoke to. Right, David? Every single one. Not one of them was afraid. And we went to some very elite units and spent a lot of time with a lot of very dangerous mission chayalim who are going to do all kinds of very, very complicated things. So in this week's parsha, we're told by Yisa Yaakov es Raglav Vayelech Arza B'nei Kedem. What does it mean? Vayisa Yaakov es Raglav, that he lifts his legs. Says Rashi, Mishan es Basar B'sura Tova Shehuvtach B'Shmira. I really feel, I don't know if everybody here does the parsha every week, but you should. Really, everyone should. It speaks to me. I did not prepare a shir. I just did Shnai Mikra on the plane on the way home. And it just sticks out at you. So Yaakov Avinu, it says that Vayisa Yaakov Ragla Vayelech Arza B'nei Kedem, says Rashi, Mishan is Baser B'sura Tova Shehuvtach B'Shmira. Once Yaakov Avinu was promised that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was going to save him and was going to look out for him, Nasa Libo Es Ragla V'Nasa Kal Aleches. He wasn't afraid. And suddenly it was easy for him to go on his journey. Why should I be afraid? So I know that I'm going to go out into the world and I know it's going to be complicated. I'm going to end up in this house and that house and I'm going to be cheated and tricked. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu promised me I'm going to be okay. Suddenly it makes a very difficult journey much easier. That's why the Torah says, Vayisa Yaakov Raglav. He lifted his legs. What does it mean? Of course, when you walk, you have to lift your legs. It means almost he flew there. Because he was excited. He was not afraid. And that is the feeling that I had. Every army base we visited, every chayal with whom we spoke, every unit that we interacted with shared the same dynamic, energetic, optimistic, confident, and encouraging sentiment. They all feel the same way, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is fighting with them, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is holding their hands, and that they have a havtacha. One of the commanders in the IDF drone unit that we went to visit, and by the way, when you think about a drone, you think, oh, a little drone that people play with. We saw these drones. They're the size of airplanes. They actually have a runway to take off. These drones are nothing that you can ever imagine. We were on the base with them. And the commander of that drone unit told me something that I never knew. He said, you know what Hezbollah means? I said, I have no idea what it means. He says, well, in Arabic, Chizev, which is the beginning of the word, Chizev is shaliach. Hezbollah is made up of two words. Chizev Allah. We are messengers of God. That's what they believe. They are messengers of God. So he told me that. I stored it away. I thought it was interesting. As I was thinking about it later, you might be fascinated to hear the following. I was reminded of a pasuk in Sefer Shoftim. There were many different generations of Jewish history where there were enemies fighting, not only over the land of Eretz Yisrael, but all over, causing trouble for the Jewish people. Listen to the way it's described in Sefer Shoftim. Be'ela agayim asher haniyach Hashem lenasos bam es Yisrael. How is that formulated? These are the nations of the world who God put in front of them, lenasos bam es Yisrael. What does that mean? To test the Jewish people. Eis kol asher lo yadu es kol melchamas kanan. And then the pasuk lists all the different nations that were fighting against the Jewish people. And why were they fighting against the Jewish people, says the Navi? Vayiu lenasos bam es Yisrael. All of them were put there by the Ribono shel Olam to test the Jewish people. Ladas, to know. Hayishmu es mitzvos Hashem asher tziva es avosam biad Moshe. That's what our enemies are put there for. The Navi told us already. Hezbollah is not a name that they made up. They are the shluchim of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. All of them. Linasos Bam Es Yisrael, to test the Jewish people, Ladas, to know, Hayishmu Es Mitzvos Hashem Asher Tziva Es Avos Ambiad Moshe. Look deeply inside of yourself and ask. You're incessantly following WhatsApp groups and dropping off your coats and who knows where they're going and giving money and volunteering and doing all kinds of things. Has your relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu grown one iota in the last 6 weeks? If it hasn't, then you're failing. And it has to. Because all of this, the Navi tells us, is Lenasos Bam Es Yisrael. All of this is set up with a cheshbon in mind. It's to see whether Hayishmu Es Mitzvos Hashem Asher Tziva Es Avosam Biad Moshe. Somebody told me this week, I haven't been able to daven in the last 6 weeks. I'm so busy watching the news. You're so busy watching the news and therefore you can't daven? Why are you watching the news? When you watch the news, it doesn't make you want to daven? When you see what's happening, it doesn't compel you to understand there's so much to daven for? That the Ribono Shel Olam is turning our world upside down and there's a world war that's about to break out? I tell you, every single base that we spoke to told us the same thing. This is child's play, what's going on in Gaza. Every one of them said the same thing. If we end up having a problem in the north, that is a world war. What's going on in Gaza is nothing. You understand what's happening? I don't think we realize what's happening. So people are getting stuck on, we should have gone to the rally, we shouldn't have gone. Oh, really? This is what we're busy with? Do whatever you want. But realize the severity of what's happening. Realize that this is all Lenasos Bam Es Yisrael. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has sent Shluchim to test the Jewish people. Hayishmu, are they prepared to listen? Es Mitzvos Hashem Asher Tziva Avosam Biyad Moshe. Are they prepared to double their commitments to what it means to be the people who carry the torch of Moshe Rabbeinu? Are we prepared to do that? Are we prepared to make sacrifices, to make choices? There were Rabbanim in New Jersey who called me 2 weeks ago. What are we going to do? It's almost winter break. What is everyone going to do for winter break this year? It's a really good question. I really don't know what the answer is. What is everyone going to do winter break? So I'm the bad one in the room who's going to bring up the question that all of us should start thinking about it. What are you doing winter break? Our community takes all kinds of trips during winter break. Maybe it's good, maybe it's bad. It's not my place to judge. Are we really going to go to the Bahamas this year in winter break? Please answer my question. Really? Are we really going to do that? I don't know how somebody can do that. And if you're doing that, I think, pardon me if I'm wrong, you don't understand the intensity of what's happening. You just don't get it. You don't understand what people are living through. You don't know what it means to be a member of Kibbutz Be'eri who saw beheadings with their own eyes. You just don't understand it. It's just not the appropriate time. So we have a few weeks to work it out. I'm not saying we should sit home and make our children do nothing for their winter break. But just take into account, what are we going to do? How are we going to respond? What chinuch are we giving our children this year winter break? When you think about so many tens of thousands of children who are displaced in Israel. I watched the video yesterday. And there's actually sound for this part of kids who watch their parents being murdered in front of their own eyes. And then they walk them back in, back and forth, to make sure the kids see it over and over again. And the kid is blinded in one eye from the grenade that was thrown at him. I watched this yesterday. I saw it. And we're just going to take our kids to the Bahamas? Do we not understand what's happening? Yeah, we don't understand what's happening. But we need to be made to understand what's happening. And we need to react and respond appropriately. Being in Kfar Aza and Be'eri was so shocking, so horrifying. Every house is not just the middle of a war zone. Every house is a full-blown battlefield. That's what every single house is. The awful stench of death everywhere you turn. The community is drenched with blood. Still, 6 weeks later, There are 60 members of Zaka who are there on a daily basis, not looking for things, just still cleaning up. This is not to be believed. We had to sanitize our shoes after we left because they were soused with endless carnage that we were stepping into and walking into houses. It was such an awful experience. My only way to describe it, as I said, was all of the descriptions that I've read of those who liberated concentration camps and what they felt and how they put that into words and tried to capture and convey those awful moments. That's what it felt like. It's the only thing I could think of comparing this to. It was chilling to the core, absolutely gruesome, worse than anything I had heard about or imagined. And then, hearing direct, first-hand accounts from survivors and listening to them share their stories was therapeutic for them, but it was so beyond anything that we can handle. And you walk around these eerily quiet neighborhoods now, not a sound to be heard, not a person in sight, other than thunderclaps of rockets flying and artillery shells being fired every 2 to 3 minutes. As I was going through that, I was reminded of the Pasuk and Sefer Melachim with Eliyahu HaNavi. Eliyahu HaNavi is told that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is on his way, that the Ribono Shel Olam is coming. Vayomer, and he said, Seva Amadata Bahar Lefnei Hashem. He is told to stand on the mountain. Vihinei Hashem Over. Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu is passing through. And suddenly he notices, Beruach Gedola V'chazak Mefarek Harim U'Meshaber Slayim Lefnei Hashem. And he sees that there's a hurricane. A Ruach Gedola Meshaber Slayim. What kind of winds are able to break mountains and tear down houses? A hurricane, a tornado. And he sees a large tornado starts rushing through the area. But he's told, Lo Beruach Hashem. That is not the way that God expresses himself. And after that terrible hurricane, there was a rash. There's so much noise. And he can't understand what it is. And he's told, Lo Barash Hashem. You're waiting for the Ribono Shel Olam. He's not in the tornado and he's not in all the noise. For Achar Harash Eish. And after all of that, suddenly the whole place goes up in smoke and fire. And once again, he's told, Lo Be'esh Hashem, it's not where you find the Ribono Shel Olam. After all that subsides, is a kol demama daka. Is a still, quiet, eerily quiet voice. And that is where you find the Ribono Shel Olam. And that's what I felt. There was a rash. There was a Eish, there was a Ruach Gedola. You do not find the Ribono Shel Olam in all of that. You felt the Ribono Shel Olam in the Kol Demama Daka and the silence. And then Mfaked of the army asked me to say a Kelmale in Kaddish before we left one of the houses on the kibbutz. And it was a house where the entire family was slaughtered in their bedrooms and in their living rooms. And amidst the still and silent muted remains of this family, we called out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu Yisgadel V'Yisgadesh Shemei Rabba. We asked the Ribono Shel Olam that his name should be elevated once again, that the world should recognize and come to an understanding. V'Yomahu Yiyah Hashem Echad U'Shma Echad. Not sure if it was right or wrong. You know, everybody has their own preferences of what they add into the davening. Some people add for a cholem, some people add for Parnassa and Tshuva and all different things. We daven Mincha there on the kibbutz. Actually came to my attention yesterday. Rabbi Billet called me to discuss something and he mentioned to me, I heard you were in this kibbutz. I said, yeah. He said, do you know that we, our shul, built that shul on the kibbutz? I was so shocked. It was like the most intense Mincha I ever davened. I felt like it was Ne'ilah when we davened there. And it's the shul that our community built. He basically said it was a totally unaffiliated kibbutz. And at some point there was a vote in the kibbutz. There were a couple of people who wanted a shul, even though most of the community didn't want. And they won by a very small margin, but the rest of the community didn't want to pay for it. And Rabbi Billet at the time had said, if there's a kibbutz in Israel that wants to have people have a minyan, we're going to help them build it. And he got together with Shlomo Ra'anan, who's a big tzaddik in Eretz Yisrael. And they built the kibbutz, and that's where we davened. I was so shaken up to know that. So we were davening there, and I didn't listen to everybody else's private Shemona Esrei. I don't know what they were davening for, what they were talking about. I know what I added to my Shemona Esrei, and maybe I shouldn't have. I don't know. But sometimes you just feel emotionally that something is the right thing to do, and that's what you do. The only thing I added was the tefillah from Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. Meloch HaKol HaOlam Kulo B'Chvotecha. You stand in a place where you feel the void of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You feel so confused. And you ask the Ribono Shel Olam, Meloch HaKol HaOlam Kulo B'Chvotecha. Restore your glory. It's what we say in Kaddish. Yiskadel v'yiskadesh shemei rabba. Why do we say that when somebody suffers a loss, a tragedy? We say that because at a moment of loss and tragedy, the name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is a little bit diminished. The name of, it's like the Navi Yecheskel describes, it's a little bit of a Chilul Hashem. When something terrible happens, you start asking, where's the Ribono Shel Olam? How did he let this happen? What we ask for is that he should fill that void. And this Kol Demama Daka, this eerily quiet neighborhood, should be filled with an understanding of what our Kadosh Baruch Hu is all about. V'yeda kol pol ki ata fialto v'yavin kol yitzur ki ata yitzarto v'yomar kol asher neshama b'yapo Hashem Elokei Yisrael melech u'malchuso b'kol mashal. That's what we say on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, but it meant so much more when you feel the lack of presence of Shechina. All I was davening for was we should have the opportunity to feel that, to embrace it, to experience it again. In Parshas Miketz, we read the famous story of Paro and his dreams. And in describing this very unusual story, the Psukim tell us, Vayikatz Paro, Vayishan, Vayachalom Shenis. Paro has a dream, great revelations. God was clearly communicating with him. The Ribono Shel Olam was sending him one message after the other. And these were important messages. But what does he do? He wakes up. Vayishan, he goes back to sleep. Vayachalom shenis, he has a dream again. Just rolls over and goes back to sleep. Contrast his response with Yaakov Avinu in this week's Parsha, who also has a dream. Vayikatz Yaakov Mishnaso, and as he's having this dream, he's startled. He's shaken to his core and he wakes up. And he says, Achein yesh Hashem b'makom hazeh. You can live through an experience where the Ribono Shel Olam is communicating with you, and you can have two kinds of responses. The Ribono Shel Olam is no longer, like somebody told me, he's no longer talking to us. He's screaming at us. Maybe you don't hear. Get your hearing aids checked. You're on the wrong frequency. Are you going to react like Paro Melech Mitzrayim? Just roll over and go back to sleep? Or are you going to react like Yaakov Avinu and say, Achin yesh Hashem b'makom hazeh, there's some message that's being communicated. The Ribono Shel Olam wants something out of me. We're all celebrating the fact that these chayalim are putting on tefillin and they all want to wear tzitzis and it's beautiful and it's great. What about us? The people who wore tefillin all along and who were wearing tzitzis and were keeping Shabbos, has your Shabbos gotten 1 ounce more special? Have you spent 5 minutes on Friday night after your meal saying Tehillim? Have you done anything more meaningful in your religious experience, just like so many other unaffiliated Jews are doing? They're making their commitments. They're putting on tefillin. They're starting to wear tzitzis. They're doing hafreshas challah. All beautiful. What have I done? Am I going to react like Yaakov Avinu and say, Achein yesh Hashem b'makom hazeh? Something big is happening. Or am I going to just roll over and say, like, Paro Melech Mitzrayim, go back to sleep, and maybe something else will happen that will wake me up in the future? This is our moment. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is communicating with us. In last week's parsha, by Yisrotzu to Abanim Bekirba, Rivka Imenu is pregnant, and she has twins, and she's confused, as Rashi tells us. One is pushing out here and the other one's pushing out there. And she says, Vatomer em kein lama ze anochi, vatelech lidroshes Hashem. And she goes to seek counsel from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I don't know about you. If my wife was pregnant and had some kind of very uncomfortable feeling, I wouldn't go to shul. I would go to the doctor. You go to the obstetrician. You ask, what's happening? But Rivka Imenu understands something is confusing. Something doesn't make sense. The Ribono Shel Olam is talking to me. Batelech Lidrosh Hashem. That's what we do. When something bothers us, when something doesn't add up, when something doesn't make sense, you don't only go to the doctor, which of course you need to do, but you realize what's beneath that. Batelech Lidrosh Hashem. You try to find counsel. You try to find perspective. You try to look deeply inside of yourself and understand, what is the Ribono Shel Olam communicating to me? Like Yaakov Avinu in our Parsha. Let me close with one. Again, I can show this picture to anyone. 2 weeks ago, there was a woman who came, spent a lot of time with her. She has 5 family members who are being held hostage in Gaza. Think about someone who has 1 family member. And then you think about somebody who has 5 family members. So we spent the whole day in the city. Actually brought her to speak in Stern College last week. She said she wanted to go out to dinner. I said, okay, I guess we'll go out to dinner. So we went out. Spent a lot of time talking about everything that's on her mind. And at some point she shared with me, I have her permission to share this. At some point she sent me a screenshot of her WhatsApp conversations with her father in real time as this was unfolding. Her father lives in Near Oz. And he writes to his daughter at 10:09 a.m., Yesh mechablim b'toch habayit shel Vivi. There are terrorists in the home of the next door neighbor. Right next to us. Samud habayit shelanu. Skurim b'toch hamamad. We locked ourselves in the safe room. Mikavim shelo yikamsu lekan. We hope that they're not going to come into our home. So she writes back, Abba tinalu hakol. Make sure you lock everything up. 10:18, Makore Abba. Where are we holding? What's going on? He writes back, 10:19, Yesh mechablim bachutz. We hear there are terrorists all around us. Anachnu skurim, we're locked up. But we hear the neighbors, Hashchenim, we hear all of our neighbors, Tzoakim ba'aravit. All of our neighbors are screaming in Arabic. It wasn't their neighbors. It was all those who had taken over the neighbors. 10:40, she writes back, Abba Yesh Hadash. Any update? 10:42, he writes, Nichnasu b'kama batim misaviv. They've entered into many of the homes around us. Avopo odlo. But here, so far nothing. 11:03, Nichnasu. They've come into our house. Yesh ra'ashim b'bayit. There's so much noise. They're clearly destroying everything. Nikabel etov nishikot. I'm hoping that we'll be okay, and I'm sending you my love. 11:04. Abba nu, ze tzava lo. It must be the army. This can't be real. Terrorists have taken over a community? We've heard a terror attack here or there, taking over a whole community, destroying your house. It must be the army. 11:04, he writes back, lo. They're smashing on the doors. They're breaking everything. This is not the army. 11:05. Why don't you call the army and tell them that you're stuck? 11:07. 11:28. Let me know that you're okay. 1241 was her last attempt to communicate with her father when she writes, Abba ta'aneh b'vakasha. I was crying when I read this with her. But I thought, if I were to have a WhatsApp conversation with the Ribono Shel Olam, just to put it in our terms, would that not be the punchline of what I would say? Abba ta'aneh b'vakasha. Where are you? How can you let this happen? How can this be? And that's what we ask for. We have so much that we question. We have so much that we're confused about. We have so much pain that not only our generation is enduring. Something that really resonated with me was a few weeks ago when Rabbi Penner spoke here in the shul for one of the evening Tehillims. He gave a perspective that I didn't think about until he said it. And he mentioned, you know, we're living through this time. Welcome to Jewish history. If you're 65 years old or younger, you've basically never really experienced Jewish history because this has not been real. What we're experiencing now is what Jews have always experienced in every generation. So welcome to Jewish history. This is what it is. And as we live through this very, very difficult time, we all turn to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and we ask Him, Abba ta'aneh b'vakasha. We ask that He answer our tefillos. We ask that He answers Nikmas dam avadecha hashafuch. We say Avarachamim on Shabbos. Maybe we don't think about the words. But Avarachamim is describing everything that happens. We ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu, V'nikesi damam lo nikesi v'Hashem shochein b'tzion. We ask the Ribono Shel Olam to see our suffering, to appreciate our pain, to bring us to a time where we'll have an understanding of V'yeda kol pa'ul ki ata fi'alto, V'yavin kol yitzur ki ata yitzarto. We hope that we will come to that time when HaKadosh Baruch Hu will share with us that perspective, that understanding. And once again, Vishavu Banim Ligvulam, that the Jewish people will finally be home, be free from their enemies, be living a life connected and one, once again, with the Ribono Shel Olam. That is what we fight for. This is why we're investing. This is why our children are going out on the front lines. This is why the country and the state and the people of Israel are so interested in this battle. It's not only politically, it's not only for security, but at its core, we all understand. It's to have the opportunity to have the Jewish people once again living in close proximity with the Ribono Shel Olam and a kibbutz galios that will bring us all to that understanding, that appreciation, and to that time of Umala Haaretz Deyas Hashem Kamayim Leyam Mechasim.